Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olifier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. And welcome back to Divine Intervention. This, of course, is February, and in a week's time or so, we have Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day associated with lots of chocolate, which we're not tasting this evening, and with some bubbly, which we are tasting this evening. And in keeping with the theme, it's a pink, a Brut Rosé bubbly. But before I give every detail about the wine we're tasting, let's have a quick hello to our food and wine guru down in the Cape. He's the recipient of the Eat Out Lifetime Achievement Award for eating and drinking himself into a stupor. Michael Olifier, great to chat to you again.
Thank you, John. That's very sweet of you.
Well, thanks for emerging from your stupor to give us some sound tasting notes on what I hope is going to be a very enjoyable wine. With me in the Joburg studio for the fourth week in a row, and don't worry, we'll be throwing them out next week, even though they'll be knocking on the door, trying to break in and drink more of our free booze. We have Chris Gilmore from Absa Investments, a great friend of the investor community, and somebody who I know enjoys life as well. Chris, great to chat to you.
Thank you very much, John.
And somebody who also enjoys life, a wine writer, but his day job is branding away, Jeremy Sampson.
John, always good to be here.
Well, always good to have in front of me something that made a very nice pop a few minutes ago when I opened it. There are a few pleasures like the sound of a champagne cork popping out of a bottle. And I know, Michael Olifier, it's a Cap Classique, it's not a champagne. But that's the generic term we use in South Africa. And just because the French won some trade spat with us, it doesn't mean that on Divine Intervention, we can't dabble with a few legal problems. It's the Graham Beck Brut Rosé. I think it's a non-vintage. Tell us about it, Michael.
Yeah, well, it uses the two great grapes of champagne, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. It's a 60% Chardonnay, 40% Pinot Noir. And what I like about this wine is this lovely sort of, almost sort of, you know, if stainless steel could be pink, that would be the color of the wine. And those very fine bubbles rushing up to the top, forming that sort of crown around the edge of the glass. And then you get your nose into it, and it's just Pinot Noir wonderfulness. There's the sort of the cherries, the raspberries, and then there's the sort of the seriousness that the Chardonnay gives to it, with those lovely smells, the sort of mineral, and then that sort of windfall citrus flavor there as well. I think this is a really, really, really nice wine. It's nice, and it's got a lovely fresh acidity to it. It's great as an aperitif, but fabulous with food as well.
If stainless steel could be pink, you Valentine romantic, Michael Olifier. here, darling, have a girder for Valentine's Day. But I have to say, I agree with you, Michael. I'm thoroughly enjoying this. As you know, I have a great love of a bubbly, particularly as you enter a great restaurant, you're sitting there about to stare at the menu, about to choose some great wines. What could be nicer than having a great glass of wine? And Graham Beck is producing something, I hope you'll agree, Michael, no champagne producer would be too embarrassed to put this under one of their labels, would they? This is world-class stuff out of South Africa.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, Peter Ferreira, who is the sort of senior winemaker for Graham Beck, is well entrenched in the Metaux Cup Classique world. He was working with the pioneers probably 20 or more years ago when Cup Classique, when there were just a couple of producers. I mean, now obviously there are a number of producers. So Peter certainly has the expertise, the experience, and I mean, the Graham Beck bubblies are really just brilliant.
Chris Gilmore, are you enjoying this?
This is lovely. You know, just carrying on from what Michael was saying, I remember back in the 80s when I came here, the bubblies in this country were pretty nondescript. And over the years, I've noticed a huge improvement to the extent that, as you were saying, John, these are actually very, very, I mean, they're world class now. And correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Barack Obama have something like this at his inauguration a few years ago?
Michael, can you remember? It was a South African bubbly, wasn't it?
It was, and it was a grand egg. And I can't remember the detail, but I have a feeling that he had it in a restaurant somewhere, but whether he had it at his graduation or not, I can't remember.
Well, I have to say, Michael, I've just poured myself a second glass of this, which is unusual during a 15-minute podcast recording. I am loving this. Onto the food and wine pairings, which I know we often discuss. But Jeremy Sampson, just to bring you in, how much do you think a wine like this deserves its place throughout a meal, throughout a dinner, throughout life?
Mm. I think the first thing, John, is to say that there seems to be almost a stigma attached at times to pink wines, rosé wines, and to me, they're absolutely wonderful.
Just don't try to sell them in Nigeria.
That's also true, and I believe there are another 77 countries as well. But the fact is that if you don't drink rosé wines or rosé, bubbly, whatever, I think you're missing out on the experience. They're wonderful, they're marvellous, they fit into a whole thing. When to serve is an interesting question. I know that there is another gentleman in the Western province who actually will say the time to serve bubbly is at breakfast. And what better on Valentine's Day to serve a glass of this?
With the one you love, and then go off to the mistress. Yeah. But moving away from the president of France, Michael Olivier, it is a valid point, is it not, that sometimes we tend to live in little boxes, we tend to feel that we should do what everyone's doing at the next table. I like you, and I know you go to a lot of wine functions. I've been to functions where you've had bubbly from the time you arrive to the time they put you in the wheelbarrow and put you in your car.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would be hard pushed to find a bubbly that would go well with a piece of steak. But I mean, certainly, if your main course was duck or poultry or fish or seafood or veal, maybe even pork, maybe you could happily just sip on a glass of bubbly right through from the aperitif through to soup and right through to nuts at the end.
It's funny you mention that because I remember when I was living in Europe and it was game season. Pheasant in champagne sauce was one of the great delights, one of the most impressive dishes I have ever been served. You can cook with this as well, can't you? Any suggestions, Mike?
Now, I must tell you a very amusing story. I worked with a wonderful lady called Theodora von Arnhem, and she had a great summertime trick, which she called the tumbling peach. And she would go to the Salt River fruit and veg market and she would buy the tiniest, ripest peaches that she could possibly find. And then she would take them and she would, with a needle, prick holes in them and pop them into a wine glass and then pour bubbly over them. And the peach would start tumbling because of the contact of the bubbles on the skin and the holes, etc. And you'd have this whirring around and of course imparting its flavor to the wine as well, but certainly you can cook with it. I mean, I've had some fabulous jellies made from sparkling wine with berries and, you know, fruit and raspberries, strawberries, blueberries, etc. Lovely.
Chris Gilmore, just returning to a theme that I know that you and I have discussed over recent months, and I've discussed it with some of your colleagues in the Investment Analyst Society. In the last few months, I've received invitations to two media events, which are held fairly close to lunchtime. One hosted by an offshore listed financial services company. I won't name it, but the boss is called Roberts. And another one hosted by an accounting firm with a P and a W and a C. I can't remember their name. And on both occasions, they've got media briefings, and On both occasions, I've seen that they're offering finger food and all that rubbish. Now, as somebody who has to drive quite a way to attend an event, and who wants to be looked after and nurtured and loved when I'm at that event, I've said, yeah, will there be a glass of wine? From one of the two, I've received an ambiguous answer. From the other one, I've received the answer, well, journalists aren't really interested in wine. I know that you and some of your colleagues in the Investment Analyst Society, like me, enjoy not overindulging, because we've got to go back to work, we've got to get into our cars. But I find that there is a great contraction in the degree of hospitality and generosity and good spirit which is being offered by many people who are hosting important people like you and me. Any thoughts?
No, I think you're right. And we've looked into this with a bit of detail. In fact, our executive officer, Anne-Marie Wood, looked at this a while ago and found out that at these various presentations to which you're referring, only about 5% of the attendees actually drink alcoholic beverages. So cost, as far as I'm concerned, is not an issue. Because if it's only 5%, for goodness sake, indulge the people. I mean, where's the problem, for goodness sake? But secondly, over and above that, if you look at the cost of cool drinks these days, they're not vastly different in terms of price compared with beer, perhaps a little bit cheaper than wine, obviously, and spirits. But the point is, cost, as far as I'm concerned, really is not an issue, and I think it's been used to cloud the whole issue out there. I think it's a bit of an American thing over the past couple of decades. Americans do not like drinking at lunchtime. In dinner, yes, they indulge themselves, but at lunchtime presentations, they don't like doing it. It's a bit patronizing, I think. It's a bit paternalistic, and I think one should not try and second guess what your guests would like to have at lunchtime. That's just my personal opinion.
Now, Jeremy Sampson, I've had the privilege of having more than one lunch with you, and some of them have involved more than one bottle. If you are hosting someone, is it not good manners to let them indulge a little in the alcohol?
John, if you're inviting someone to be your guest, and you're, let's face it, when you go to media briefings, that particular company wants you to talk about them in the media, that's why you're there, you would think they would indulge you a little bit. You know, we're drinking here an extremely pleasant rosé bubbly. I'm not sure, Michael, the price of it. I'm guessing it's probably around about 100.
Under 100.
And, you know, you can go from about, 60, 70 round upwards, but you can't go much beyond, I don't know, 250. What is it going to cost those companies to put a dozen bottles on the stage to give to people? And I think it's false economy.
Yeah, exactly.
False economy.
And poor manners. Don't get me pissed, you'll get me pissed off. Michael Oliver, a final thought on that?
I think if you're going to be giving hospitality to people, you'd give hospitality and you'd do your whole thing with a nice spirit of some sort, be it wine, be it sherry. It's just a generous thing to do.
And Michael, your thoughts on the way in which Previn Gordon's last mini-budget speech, he said, no booze at government functions. There appears to have been a bit of a U-turn in implementing that. Maybe now it's no foreign booze. I think government functions are an ideal place, particularly where you have foreign visitors, to promote our wines.
Absolutely.
And Jeremy Sampson, your views on the way in which some South African diplomats and other officials could and should be promoting our booze, our wonderful Cape wines and spirits.
Well, this is a wonderful opportunity at all times to showcase South Africa. You have important people who come to your function. They come in anticipation. This is an opportunity to sell South Africa, sell South African wines, and it should be taken at all opportunities.
Chris Gilmore, final thought on this.
I fully endorse what Jeremy's just said. Look, we are not a teetotal society. We're not a Middle Eastern society. We are a relatively open society. And I think we should, and I think we're very glad that there has been a bit of a U-turn on this whole process. And we should take the opportunity at government level to show the rest of the world just how good our wines are and see it for what it is, a wonderful marketing opportunity.
And for those of you in corporate communications, I am available, but do look after me. Michael Olifier, we've been tasting the Graham Beck Brut Rosé. I think anybody would be my Valentine if I offered them a bottle or two of that. What do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great wine.
And thanks so much for chatting to us again. Lovely to chat to you, Michael. We'll be back next week.
Brilliant.
And to our Joburg studio guests, Jeremy Sampson, always a pleasure.
John, always a pleasure.
Chris Gilmore, always a pleasure.
I'll drink to that.
Well, from the pleasurable atmosphere, with a little bit more wine to finish, this has been Divine Intervention. I'm John Fraser, still sober, just.